Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Firestore as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Firestore has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Firestore's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Firestore. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Firestore, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.
Hey there, everybody. This is Pete Prokilo, online editor with Fire Engineering, and we're here with Five Questions on Training podcast. We know now that there are a lot of great small training outfits out there in the American Fire Service. So in this irregular podcast series, we're going to try and take a look at some of them and give you some profiles of instructors around the nation. So I'm talking today with Mike Zikiki, the owner instructor of Specialized Rescue Training and a 20-year veteran of the fire service, where he's currently a fire captain for the Vacaville Fire Department in California. He recently wrote a piece for us on the solutions to mitigate elevator entrapments that you can find on the Fire Engineering or the Firefighter Nation website, and we'll include a link to that one with this podcast so you can take a read. But today we're going to take a look at Mike's approach to training. So first of all, Mike, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. So if you can tell us a little bit about your background in the fire service, you know, how you got started, maybe some of the mentors you've encountered along the way.
Absolutely. First, I'd like to start by saying that I'm married to my beautiful wife, Catherine. We have three boys that I'm very proud of. Two of them are mine, and one of them I've inherited. And I try to pass on to them my approach that I've tried to apply and pass on to the fire service is that if you work hard, life will come easier. If you work easy, life is going to be much harder. So I started my career in the fire service at the early age of 15 years old when I became a explorer firefighter or junior firefighter with the Benicia Fire Department. Once I started that program, I quickly realized that it was my calling, the love for the fire service, the ability to serve and give back to others, and also liked that the profession was all-encompassing. It was high energy. No 2 days were ever the same. And you were a jack of all and master of none. So I worked through the Explorer program into the volunteers with Benicia Fire. And then I went on to get hired what was CDF, now Cal Fire. Back then, I worked the 2000 season at Brooks with CDF in the Sonoma Lake Napa unit. And then the following year, I was also working private ambulance at the same time for a local company in Solano County. And in 2001, I got offered a job with Vacaville Fire Department, where I'm still currently working. I was a fireman for 11 years, an engineer for a little over four. I've been a company officer now for 8 years, where I'm assigned to C shift, truck 74. Captain, and I'm currently in a long-term outer rate position currently as B shift's battalion chief. a little bit of what I've done there. I've taught at the college level. I'm also a registered instructor with State Fire Training. And so I've taught hosted classes through my department and also for outside agencies. I've been a shift trainer with my department. I've also ran an in-house academy for the department and instruct many different disciplines in our recruit academies. So that's just a little bit about me of where I've arrived to now. One of my big mentors that's no longer in the job as per se to Vacaville Fire Department is Brian Moore, which is a great friend, a mentor. We instructed together. I worked under Brian was my company officer. And then I also, as a firefighter, I also drove for Brian as an actor. And then I also got to work for Brian as a company officer before he retired in the rank of battalion chief. And outside of the fire service now, I've been very grateful to establish some relationships with people that I look up to. And one of those that I'd like to give credit to is Andoni Castros. And if it wasn't for Chief Castros, I wouldn't be doing this podcast today. He's opened the link and provided me this relationship with Peter, and I'm very grateful for that. And so there's others in the fire service that have motivated me and that I look up to. And another one of those is Frank Vascuso. And I've actually had the honors of being able to get some wisdom and speak to him prior to doing this podcast, and very grateful for that.
Well, we know Andoni and Frank very well here, Fire Engineering and, FDIC as well. Great instructors, great guys. And so very cool that you were able to hook up with them. And I know they'll be teaching for us next week at FDIC International. So if you're coming out to Indy, please be sure to get in on their classes. But so Mike, if you can talk to us a little bit about your training outfit, which is Specialized Rescue Training. How'd you get started in it? What are you specializing in, etc. If you can.
Absolutely. Specialized Rescue Training was established and trademarked in 2015. And what Specialized Rescue Training is bringing solutions to elevator entrapments. And so the whole goal and the mission of the company is fire departments are strategically located, and there is a lot more firemen than there are elevator technicians. And so the goal is that we would respond to elevator entrapments in a timely fashion and be able to removed and trapped occupant or occupants in a timely fashion without doing any harm to the occupants or ourselves, and not doing any further damage to the elevator while in the process of. And so that's the whole goal and the mission of the fire department. And as you may be aware of, I'm speaking to the California Fire Service. Today, the California Fire Service still currently does not have a standard or a recognized curriculum when it comes to dealing with and mitigating elevator entrapments. And so what I've developed and built my program off of is American Society of Mechanical Engineers 17.4. And that's a document that speaks to elevator mechanics and facility engineers. And once you get a few pages into that document, it says if those individuals aren't successful with mitigating an elevator entrapment, they recommend that you contact your local fire department and law enforcement, which I find kind of entertaining because very few departments I'm finding are doing training on elevator entrapments. And as I said, in the state of California, we don't have a recognized curriculum to follow. Additionally, California is the one state that is different than the other 49. The other 49 states, they have escutcheon tubes in their elevator doors and the hoistway doors to where you can use lunar keys to pick those doors if needed. And in California, there was legislation passed years and years ago that now we no longer can use lunar keys in those doors, either don't have lunar ways or they've been blinded off. So we have to have a different approach. And so what my goal is that I would like to close the gap between the elevator union and the fire service. And elevator companies aren't passing on this training is because if we go out and we do damage to the doors, that's more profit for them. They're going to come out and replace it. But who the loser is in the process is the business or the occupancy owner, because they're the one that gets stuck with the bill. And to me, if we're going out and we're doing unnecessary damage due to lack of training, that is not professional. And so the goal is that everybody wins, is that we get occupants out in a timely fashion without doing any harm to them or ourselves or creating any extra angst or panic. And we also don't do any damage to the elevator in the process, resulting in a bill for the business or property owner. And then in the end, we look professional and we also are not tied up on scene several hours waiting for an elevator mechanic or technician to come mitigate the entrapment for us because we don't have the knowledge, skills, and ability. And so that's my goal, is to bring knowledge, skills, and ability to the California Fire Service when dealing with elevator entrapments.
All right. And I know that we have, a lot of outfits, out there teaching, variants of elevator rescue. I think yours, you kind of defined specifically why this one is important for California in particular. What got you interested in this particular angle? Was it a specific incident? Was it, was there some event that kind of spurred you onto this?
Absolutely, Peter. Yeah, just prior to me getting off of probation here in Vacaville as a fireman, I was assigned to our truck company, and we received a call was dispatched to a local movie theater in town, Brendan Theaters, for an elevator entrapment. And we had an individual stuck in the elevator. And at that time, when I came on, we had a couple picks in the department, and part of our probationary manual was getting familiar with these couple elevator picks and actually going out and using them. And to my lack of knowledge and experience at the time, I just assumed that those elevator picks would work on any and all elevators. And I just soon coming in as a new recruit on probation that we had, we said we are all risk. We had all the equipment and the tools needed to mitigate these elevator entrapments and other incidences. And so we arrived, and I quickly found out, working through our simple to complex procedure, we weren't successful in mitigating the entrapment, which resulted ultimately with us needing to use a pick. And the picks that we had at the time weren't the right pick for this particular manufacturer and door hardware on this elevator. And so, like anybody else, and I would assume most in this profession, we feel defeated when we show up to mitigate somebody else's problem and we don't have the answers or the ability to do it. It's very frustrating. It was a horrible feeling, and I never wanted to experience it again. And fortunately, I was working for a great company officer, truck officer at the time, that shared a lot of the same opinions and values and didn't want to settle for defeat, and that we weren't on our game that day. And ultimately, we had to sit on scene for an unnecessary amount of time and wait for an elevator technician to show up and mitigate the entrapment because we weren't able to. And we felt very defeated. But luckily, the company officer that I was working for He didn't settle for defeat. We followed up with the company that had the service contract for that elevator, and we arranged training to meet him out at the site another time. And so for those of you that are listening, you know that elevator mechanics or technicians are like the military. They're sworn to secrecy, and they can't give away their secrets. Every once in a while, though, you will find one that wants to share and is willing to establish a relationship with you. Please foster those. Be very grateful, because those are rarities. And a lot of my success that I have now is because of two awesome relationships that I was able to make with elevator technicians. One of them is still working into the industry with almost 34 years of experience working for three of the four majors. And a lot of my self-taught ride along mentorship when it comes to elevators has come from this individual, and I'm very grateful for it. So sorry for the sidebar there. I almost went down a rabbit hole. Coming back to that company officer, we contacted the company and was able to get a technician to come out and do follow up with us and show us why we were unable to get into the elevator. And this gentleman doesn't realize it, but he's actually the one that got me started on my journey. And after he showed us how to get in and the appropriate pick to use, which we didn't have, he dropped his pick on the floor of the theater and said that didn't happen. I've never scrambled so fast in my life to get two pieces of paper taped together and trace that pick. And then I went and made that pick for our department. And that was my start to, you don't know what you don't know, but I want to find out what else I don't know. And I started the process of self-taught of figuring out all of the different elevator manufacturers out there and all the different door hardware that could possibly be associated with them. And that was what gave me my start, and everything in between is what's got me to where I'm at now. Like I said, I've been in business since 2015. I'm licensed and insured. I've taught everywhere from Fresno Training Symposium up north to Reading is my furthest department, Reading Fire, and everything in between. My largest customer today is Alameda County Fire. They're currently running 40 of my kits, and I'm in talks right now with multiple other departments of increasing their professionalism when it comes to elevator entrapments.
Very cool. So you touched on a little bit earlier about some of the distinctions between California and the rest of the country when it comes to this type of training. But you also had mentioned prior when we were talking about some of the things that makes your approach to the training, specialized rescue training specifically, distinct. Could you elaborate on that a little bit for our audience?
Sure. Yeah. What I pride myself in is a simple to complex approach, regardless of it's an elevator entrapment or any incident that we go to. The incident should always drive and dictate what we do, and we should always be able to justify our actions. And we don't want to skip over. And so I have a simple to complex approach that really starts with knowing what your seat assignments before you get off the rig are. And each individual on the rig plays a defined role. And in our organizations and other organizations that I have provided training to, the way it works for us is the officer goes to the lobby or the floor below the entrap car. The firefighter is going to take the stairs to the floor above the entrap car, and the engineer, apparatus operator, chauffeur, whatever you call them, is going to go to the machine room or the elevator room and gather some intel for us. And so as they're gathering intel, the officer and the firefighter are making contact with occupant or occupants trapped inside, trying to figure out what floor the car is closest to. And in the process, we're calming, reassuring, and making our presence known, trying to relieve that angst or panic. And not by my definition, but by the definition of American Society of Mechanical Engineers 17.4, what constitutes an emergency in an elevator entrapment is somebody inside on oxygen, portable oxygen, that has the ability for that supply to run out before they get out, or anxiety or panic. And the other thing is, ironically, if they just happen to have a medical event at the time of the entrapment or as a result of the stress caused them to have some other medical event, that is the only thing that constitutes an emergency as far as an elevator entrapment. Everything else is just some kind of component failure or power outage. And so we work through a progression of, once we've calmed and reassured, we need to determine whether that is an elevator emergency or if that's an elevator incident. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to change what we're going to do, but it dictates how far we're going to go. And we still always start with the same process. After we locate, calm, and reassure and make our presence known, it's always we go to a power reset unless we're there as a result of a power failure. Because 90% of the time, it's like resetting a computer. It needs to be rebooted. You're going to do a power reset. And once you do a power reset, the elevator is going to come back up after its self-start. And 90% of the time, that's going to resolve the entrapment. If it doesn't, we're going to secure that power, lock out, tag out, and then we're going to go on to our progression. And based on whether we have a physically able body inside or not is going to drive and dictate our next step. If I have a physically able body inside with the power secured, I can coach them and talk them through an inside out rescue without ever having to use any picks, apply any tools, apply any force to the elevator at all. And I want to remind you, any improper force applied to the elevator results in a minimum of $20,000 in damage and runs from there. And so that's what we want to try and prevent. And so if we can, we can work from an inside out approach. If we don't have an inside out approach, then that's where in California it's different. Ultimately, we have to be able to be handy with the picks. And that's another part of my business where I have my own elevator kits. And I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. They're very similar. Most of them are picks from the elevator industry that mechanics are using on a day-to-day basis. And all of my picks now are all CAD generated. And so I'm not reinventing the wheel, and all the picks are all the same to the same spec. And when elevator technicians show up to an entrapment, they're not bringing in rotary saws. They're not bringing in high pressure airbags. They're not bringing in rabbit tools. They're not bringing in spreaders, whether those are Hurst, Amicus, Hamatro, whatever you use. Most of them just have a few picks in their pocket, or they may have a small little case that they bring in and in a flashlight. And so the professionals that do it all the time on a day-to-day basis, why aren't we doing what they're doing? Why aren't we doing the same thing? Why do we feel the need to reinvent the wheel just because we're in the fire service, or go do damage just because we've been provided the opportunity to do it? That's not professional. And so very similar to the elevator industry, if you look at my website that I can share later, the other part of my service is my product. I have a small carrying case that consists of 9 picks and 3 laminated documents on how to use it. And my philosophy is that's a Slim Jim kit to be able to use at your next elevator entrapment if your department has a need for it.
Nice. Well, I what'd you say? It was 20,000 for the, in terms of the damage. That's a pretty hefty price tag right there. Right?
Yes. And we go put improper force to the elevator doors, which are the hoistway doors. When you're standing at a location waiting to go to another location, you're looking at the hoistway doors. Anytime you do apply improper force to those doors, it's going to result in damage. And it's not only is it going to be a hefty bill in excess of $20,000, you're also going to render that elevator out of service for a much longer extended time than the original problem that caused the entrapment.
All right. Well, finally, just a kind of more general question. So what do you think some of the biggest training challenges that officers and departments are dealing with in today's fire service?
You know, I would say that the challenges are specific to the different departments, size of departments, and jurisdiction. So that's kind of tough because I think there's a lot of different issues out there, and some issues may vary based on department size and capability. But I think one thing that is a constant is training budgets, and maybe the lack of money that is dedicated to training budgets. And I think training officers and organizations are having to do their best with limited budgets to cover a lot of different topics to be able to meet their mission of being all risk. And I think that's what the challenge is because fire departments are expected to be all risk and have the answers to everything. Well, to do that, we need to be able to train on everything. And that's where it gets tough. Time to do that, the time to take companies out of service without impacting other companies. That all comes down to budget, materials to conduct the training, money and funding to bring in outside instruction or to pay to provide instruction within. And so I think that the biggest thing probably a lot of departments face and having to deal with is lack of funding when it comes to training budgets. Training budgets not being adequately funded to meet their mission of all risk.
Well, Mike, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast today, making time. I know you're out training, I think, today, if I'm not mistaken. But can you tell us where we can find you on the web, where how we can contact Specialized Rescue Training, any other final thoughts you might want to throw in there?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, Peter, I really appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today. I'm very grateful for Fire Engineering hosting this. So thank you for all your efforts too that you've put into this. And absolutely, if you want to know more about Specialized Rescue Training and how we can provide solutions to your next elevator entrapment, please find us at specializedrescuetraining.com. And I thank you again for your time and listening.
No, thank you, Mike, for making the time to talk to us. And we're recording this the week before FDIC, I know a bunch of folks might be heading out to Indy next week to catch some training and the conference. So, if you are in Indy, I hope to see you around. And Mike, thanks once again, and we will catch you next time.
All right, Peter. Thank you. You have a great day.